Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 495, The Lion King. Whatever they're saying.
Now, which Lion King? Because there's two now.
Is there?
Well.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You can't just say The Lion King anymore.
Guess what? You can.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Pick. Which one are you talking about? Choose one.
Doesn't matter. Because it's all the same crap.
It's working on its roar.
Yeah.
Well, according to the box office, even though we're recording this on a Saturday, I've got some opening day numbers.
I'd be interested to see.
They're doing okay.
I bet they are.
Yeah. So before we do that, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts where you can go there, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us tremendously and we greatly appreciate it. And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like our page, because it would be silly to go there and then not like the page.
What's
that
the
seems
point?
Like a lot of work for nothing. And you could also join the group where you can kind of have your own voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to do that.
I saw the other, speaking of that on Facebook, I saw that you can follow a page without liking it. Like, what is the point of that? You get notifications when I'm showing that you like something?
I don't understand because, like on the podcast I do with my wife, like we have like
more
400 or 500 more followers than we have likes.
It's like they don't want to show that they like it, but literally doing that gives you the notifications of liking something.
Yeah,
exact same thing.
Without showing, because you know your friends can see so and so likes this page, or you know, like that's the only thing you would lose.
Well,
so
I guess
it's like
Twitter. Like Twitter, Twitter, you just follow something and you don't.
Well, right. There's not the option, but that would be like manually looking it up, I guess, and getting updates without someone saying this person follows this
other
person. You know what I mean?
Like, I do that on
do
Twitter. Yeah, for one thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's what,
well,
yes.
Okay.
That is, see, I can understand that.
Yeah.
But
not, makes sense.
Not giving him the satisfaction of one more Twitter follower. Yeah.
I mute everything political on Twitter. Yeah. I have every single keyword. President names, Congress, whatever. Like, I'm not on Twitter to do politics. I don't want to see any of it. And I'm like, and somehow, whether it's Facebook or someone sends something to me, like, I'll find out.
Oh, it's nonstop.
I'll find out. But it's like, could you imagine, like, going on Twitter? And I mean, maybe people do, but like, what it was for a while, especially during election stuff, was my entire Twitter feed was just politics. And I'm like, I don't know.
I just want to look at, you know, movie stuff.
Yeah.
I'm maybe some wrestling gifts.
Yeah. So it's crazy. But every time it's like the big news hit, it would be like, the entire Twitter was,
so it's every day
political right, and that's the problem is it became overwhelming where everyone was doing their commentary. And it's like, okay, if I hear about something, I'll look it up and get the info rather than just being delivered a barrage. So anyway, try muting keywords. It's great. Twitter, you can mute, not just, you know, it's not like blocking accounts, but you can mute one word phrases.
In my opinion, it's better than blocking the account because then they don't know they've been blocked.
Sure.
Like, I feel like people go out of their way, like, look, I got blocked by so and so.
That's
right.
True.
And it's like,
it's a badge of honor.
But if you just
whatever,
mute them, you're just like,
you don't see it.
You have no idea.
Well, yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Also, you can join the League of Show Sharers.
Done.
And yeah. Don't mute that.
Now, no. Yeah. Can you follow the League of Show Shares? I don't think you can be
a
part.
I don't think you can with
a
group.
So
you
have
yeah. to,
you're stuck.
Yeah. So, but, you know, one of the advantages of groups, we should probably say this for people that don't realize, is that, you know, if you post something on the Real Spoilers page, you can do that,
mm-hmm.
but it won't really probably be seen by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But in a group, you can start a conversation.
Yep.
So there you go.
And you can join conversations and right. everything gets moved to the top.
Yeah. yeah. It keeps the stuff that's getting engagement like bumped to the top. Uh-huh. So.
And you know what's nice? If you're worried about off mic, I was having a conversation with Tom about people being not too nice to one another in some groups out
yeah.
there. But like the Real Spoilers League of Show Share, we don't allow or even have a lot of crap, like people
if,
being rude.
Yeah,
or,
yeah we're,
it's just it's
one of the three of us are usually on there fairly constantly. And if we see something that is mean or inappropriate, we usually take action pretty quick.
We'll drive to their house and punch them right in the dick.
Yeah, that's also true.
But, even the women.
Yeah, I don't even yeah. care. No rudeness on this page.
We will install a penis and then punch it.
And then take it back.
Yes.
So, yeah, you definitely want to be a part of this group.
Why would you not want to? You could read things like this instead of just hearing
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Why would you not want that?
And you could just visualize it. And
yeah. yeah.
But people are civil on there, and we have a really good group of people that are always sharing things, and like they're sometimes they're faster on trailers and stuff than
they
we
are.
Are.
Yeah,
I mean, it's great. That's the great part about being in a group with like-minded people is you get a lot of news and updates about things that you haven't even heard yet, and it's like breaking news, and the community all works together to share stuff.
If there's ever a 4 days to have that option, it's this 4 days.
Yeah, Comic-Con, yeah.
So you can also share the show with a friend, which helps the show. It's another way to help the show is to press the share button and let people see that you like it. People who were kind enough to share the show this week, Librarian Cynthia, Julianne Jordan, Tammy Sherman Powers, Timmy Tuzoons, Brent Smith, Dustin at Nerds at Night Gaming, Susan Carlson, Lane LeVanway, Travis Tewitt, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Magic Man, and Griffin Fox Smith. So thank you very much. We really do appreciate that.
Indeed.
And do you have $5? If you have $5,
I was like, no.
And you would like us to have your $5, we would like to take your $5.
Easily.
Easily.
Yeah.
And you can do that via patreon.com/realspoilers, where you get all sorts of bonus content, and maybe we'll have you on as a guest. We need to do that again. It's been a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. with all the schedule changes and everything,
totally.
Like for this one, I would have totally had someone, but it's in the middle of a Saturday.
Yeah.
Like once we get back on our normal schedule.
We weren't sure what time we'd be doing this podcast until about 2 days
ago. We didn't want you waiting by the phone like, yeah, we'll let you know.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe
so,
we'll do it.
So anyway, I guess there's all that. So I don't know, Lion King. I guess you guys wanted to talk about Comic-Con
just
stuff
briefly.
First.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's kind of in our wheelhouse, I feel like, to granted, we've got another whole like Hall H hasn't even happened yet. Like the big Hall H is going to happen in like 2 hours our time.
Well, we got
to
have news for next week. So
that's true. That's true.
What's going on?
So we've got they just announced that they dropped the trailer for the Jay and Silent Bob reboot, which looked fun. I know that Kevin Smith is not everybody's cup of tea, but
right.
I think this looks like.
But if you like that stuff,
this is
the trailer I thought looked pretty solid. And I say that as someone who likes Kevin Smith, but didn't like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
I like Jay and Bob Strike Back. It's just a big cartoon.
I love it. I mean, yeah, it's a greatest hits. It's like you get these two characters who are such minor characters in the other movies, but you love them.
Right.
And give them their whole thing with every celebrity cameo that Kevin Smith can muster up. And it's so much fun. And that's interesting because I feel like this movie is for the people that love that movie. You know, like, I wonder what about this trailer made you...
Yeah, and maybe I won't like the movie.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, are they actually releasing this theatrically?
No, they're not.
So, it's one of those?
He is doing...
That's a shame.
I don't know. I feel like it's smart on his part.
Yeah.
Because the people that are gonna go... Are these
too.
People like if you're doing the old school like throwing the movie in the back of your trunk and driving from city to city, the people that are willing to go see that is probably a fairly small contingent of people per city.
Right.
So if you can take it like here, they're going to have it at the pageant. They're doing
right.
it at the pageant in September.
Yeah. And October 27th.
And I feel like
that for our out of town listeners, which are most of them.
Yeah,
that's true. The pageant seats seated. So it's probably 1,300 to 1,500 people on a show like that.
And I feel like that's what he's going to get.
Yeah. Oh, he'll sell that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Easily.
He sells out and adds second dates sometimes. When
yeah.
He comes
yeah.
through.
So I feel like that's the smart way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that instead of instead of movie tickets on average being $7-$8 and them getting half of that and getting $4 per ticket, these are $50 tickets. So right. I don't know if they rent the venue they or probably. If they're splitting it, but it's like they've either way, they've got $50 to start with.
The pageant probably pays them a flat rate versus a percentage is typically how that works.
Okay. So they can make a lot more money that way if the theaters aren't going to be sold out, which, again, you said it as a niche audience. Yeah. I mean, it isn't – Jay and Silent Bob stuff just isn't mainstream, but the fans are fans.
He's got an audience.
They will pay to see you live. So I agree. Like, I mean, it worked with Red State, right? Like, he ended up making his money back from that.
Is that right? Did Red State go –
Is that how he did that with Red State?
Uh-huh.
He did
it. I know he did it with the cartoon.
Yeah, Red State was the – he's self-distributed.
Okay.
Red State. I mean, maybe he did put it in some theaters, but he did tour with Red State. That was the first one I remember him doing that with.
Okay, that movie's that movie's brilliant.
And yeah, Red State was good.
But that wouldn't have...
The cartoon was awful. The
cartoon's bad.
But Red State would not have done well nationwide theatrical. Like, that's one of those indie movies that people would see, and it's really good.
Right.
Red State's a great movie, but it's one of those that, just like the other art house movies, I mean, look at Booksmart, different genre.
Sure.
But still, look at Booksmart, great movie. And look at that box office.
Well, I think his advantage, where Booksmart couldn't do this, Booksmart, I don't think, could afford to do the theater, like the stadium.
He can do
tour.
It because he's a draw.
Most everyone could not do this. I mean, he's in a unique position. But I just mean it. His movie, though, on the other hand, if it was in like every other art house movie, I mean, people would say it was great if it is. And, you know, those people would show up to the art house theater to see it. But on a mainstream level, he just, you know, but what's great is he's carved this niche market. I mean, he's one of the kings of podcasts.
He's one of the godfathers.
He's got the network out there. But also, I mean, he tours these shows. Not only does he have a huge listenership, but then he tours each of his major podcasts and can sell out a place one or two nights in a city. And that's how he makes his living. So it's interesting to see.
I mean, there's bands that work their entire life to get to that level.
Yeah.
And he can do that without having to split it with four other guys and road managers.
Him and Jay.
Yeah.
Or him and Mark Bernard or him
whoever
and,
he has tag
and,
along.
Ralph Garman.
Yeah, like it's really cool. I you know, as a podcaster, I mean, and as a fan of Kevin Smith, a lifelong fan of Kevin Smith, but the fact that, you know, I love his movies and I've grown up with them, and now I see him doing something in a medium that we're a part of and have been for years, like, just to see how he's translated that success into something that not everyone, I mean, there's not a lot of other film directors out there doing podcast tour, you know what I mean?
No.
Like, but it's like, man, for him, it works because he will sell places out and he will, you know, get that attention. Kevin Smith, when he posts stuff online, look how many people.
When he posted that thing about Ashley Tisdale, how like she dinked his car, even that was something so stupid. And it TMZ picked it up and Kevin Smith's like, no, we're. It's like I was just making a joke, making a haha, and it got blown, you know.
Yeah.
And that cost him a friendship that he has found again, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, him and Affleck are back on the same page, it looks like, and they he wrote a very touching Instagram post about how the reconnection of those
Facebook
two
post.
And was it Facebook?
Yeah. Okay. I guess they probably linked.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just, you know, like those two dudes, Ben Affleck may not, you know, have the career that he has now if it isn't for Kevin Smith.
Absolutely.
Kevin Smith put him in some stuff, and I don't think he's not going to make a career off of Dazed and Confused, I'll tell you that.
Not everyone.
Or Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Not everyone might know this, but, I mean, he's the one responsible for getting Good Will Hunting made.
Yep.
I mean, he's the one that read that script and said, hey,
check
this out.
Right.
I'll omit some of the other details with who and what company, but
don't worry, they omit those too.
Yeah, but anyway, Kevin Smith, as weird as that sounds, I mean, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are huge A-list stars, and Kevin Smith is responsible.
And they're both in Jay and Silent Bob the Reboot.
Well, and why do you think they're in all his movies? Yeah. But it's cool. I mean, it's not like they hate
it. It's nice that they have not lost sight of that.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, Kevin Smith almost tanked Ben Affleck's career twice. Well, Geely was Affleck on his own.
Yeah.
But Jersey Girl, I mean, that didn't help.
I know, but I mean,
those are back to back. That's the only reason I bring
those up.
Because
they're back to back.
Because
they're
back to
back. That makes it worse.
And,
right?
And here's the thing about Jersey Girl. It's not bad.
I know
it's
you love it.
It's a very good movie.
I think fathers to young
it's
girls.
It's a very good movie.
You relate to it, right?
Yes, absolutely. Sort of. I mean, my wife didn't die, and I didn't lose my job because I didn't back Will Smith, but it's neither here nor there.
Yes, only hyper-specific situations are relatable to that movie. You have to check all those boxes.
But yeah, so that's kind of cool. That's a cool little thing that... So go read that post. It's very touching.
I'm excited to see Affleck back in it because that's been the big thing is Affleck has not been in any of Kevin Smith's movies for a while since he got so big.
Well, he did Dogma, and then he came back and did Jay and Silent Bob.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. It. But all that other stuff since then he hasn't been in.
I guess Jersey Girl's after Jay and Bob.
Oh, is it?
I think so, yeah.
Well, then maybe there's a reason. Yeah. But if we haven't seen him, and Kevin Smith lives in Affleck's old house. He sold it to him. And, you know, so they had a really good connection there. And they just lost touch when Affleck became a huge megastar and he hadn't talked to him in
years.
Well,
he also kind of ran his mouth online. He said some stuff online that gave some stuff away, and Affleck was not happy about it.
He's a talker. I mean, that's why Kevin Smith sells out. I mean, he you know, but it's just cool to see him back because the Jay and Silent Bob movie was so successful because he brought in all these different characters from the you know, Usk universe.
Holden McNeil.
And to have him back as Holden and all the others, it's going to be fun.
He was in Clerks 2, though, wasn't he?
No. No. Oh, he is in Clerks. It's a cameo.
Yeah.
It's a very brief cameo.
But he does pop up.
Yeah, it's when Dante and... Rosario Dawson, I think, are making out on the counter.
Okay.
And it's Dante and Jen Schwalbach. They're making out on the counter, and he was like, "That's gross. Like, that's unsanitary." He's like a customer. He's like,
that's very
unsanitary, and walks out.
That's fine.
But yeah, so that's good news. They dropped the trailer for Maverick for Top Gun 2. Sure. Why not? I don't want to. Okay.
Yeah.
Take my breath away.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, somebody did post a picture of Kelly McGillis circa 2019, and they're like, I wonder why she's not in this movie. Well, there's a reason.
Which is, I'm not.
She is. Yep.
Time has not been
good to Kelly McGillis.
Oh.
Circa 2019.
Oh.
Yeah. So they did that one. They dropped. There was another trailer.
Cats?
Holy sh. What?
Yeah, you want. Yeah, talk about memory. There's one that you'd like to wipe clear.
What is that?
I've never seen a movie that the entire world wants to hate watch more than Cats. This movie,
I am shocked.
That movie's going to make $1 billion because everyone has committed to going to see it in the theater so they can talk about it and be a part of it.
Kelly McGillis circa 2019?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be mean.
No.
But she's...
It wouldn't work.
Probably a 60, 65-year-old lady.
It's like putting Kilmer in the movie. You can't do that now.
Yeah,
he's going to be in the movie.
Not in Maverick.
Yeah.
He is?
Yeah.
Have you seen him?
Well, I mean, he's in Jay and Bob.
I'm serious. Like, go to follow his Instagram because he must have had cancer.
Well, he had medical issues. That's why
I don't know if
snowman.
It was cancer specifically,
He has a tube in his throat.
Remember when he had that, they dubbed his voice? Right, we were all like, what? That's not Val Kilmer. I've been watching Val Kilmer since I was a kid.
Right,
that's not his voice.
But it's because he had throat cancer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's definitely, I mean, I just hope he gets to
is in Jay and Bob.
Yeah. He's Blunt Man.
He's Blunt Man.
Yeah.
And Supergirl's Chronic.
Yeah, I just hope. Yeah, I hope that he's a great actor, and he's been in so many iconic films. And I just hope that I hope he can get to a spot where he's comfortable. And you know, he's been doing a lot of like cons lately. And
Gay Perry,
is
his best
role.
That
was great.
I love Gay Perry. Well, so, I guess he's Knuckle.
Real Genius is his best role.
I mean, Doc Holliday.
Real Genius.
All right.
I always loved
Doc Holliday.
Chris Knight. Like, all I stand by.
That's fair.
Real Genius.
I think Doc Holliday is my favorite.
Holliday followed by Batman.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's a good movie. And I love, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Oh,
but,
so good.
Right.
But Real Genius.
Fair enough.
You also got to remember when a movie like Real Genius came out, right? Like,
you were eating that up.
They didn't have movies like that.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Now you live
sure.
in a movie in a world where every weekend there's a movie for nerds.
Right. Right. Right.
Right. And this isn't even just a movie for nerds. This is a movie that glorifies nerds.
Sure.
And it doesn't glorify nerds in like a Revenge of the Nerds way where, like, I don't know, like they got to take out their anger by like raping people.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. I was like, you can't really go to Revenge of the Nerds because he does rape somebody in that movie.
Right.
And it's okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he rapes her in a funny way.
Sure.
So it was cool.
Yeah.
But
you go to jail for that.
She liked it. So retroactively, it was okay is the kind of the rule.
What?
That's the 80s rule.
I feel like that if they ever re-release that, they're like, we got to take that out. Like,
I mean, they can't. I guess it
is a plot point.
I mean, it's a major. It resolves a major piece of the story.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Well, yeah. Then they're not re-releasing it then, because I don't.
I feel like somebody did like a 25th anniversary edition
I'm
of
sure
it.
Sure, they did. Or, I mean, yeah. It was a very popular film, but
yikes.
Yeah,
different world.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just want to say with Kelly McGillis, I'm not even trying to be mean. It's just she aged like a normal person,
not like Tom Cruise.
And I think putting her side by side with Tom Cruise would remind you how old he really is, yeah. Right?
That's true. You should do a side by side of Kelly McGillis and Tom Cruise,
right?
Circa 1987,
and all of a sudden she's going to make him look like the picture of Dorian Gray.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So then they released. They announced that there's going to be three new DC animated flicks. They're going to do Superman Red Son, which is based on the Mark Miller, Dave Johnson comic. They're going to do Superman Man of Tomorrow, which is a brand new film that's going to feature Superman in his early days. And then they're going to do Justice League Dark Apocalypse War, which is based off of a Geoff Johns Justice League comic.
Okay. I mean, I've seen one Justice League Dark, and
that movie's not bad.
Really? I didn't think that good.
Yeah, it was fine.
Oh, I thought we didn't like that one.
No, I had Swamp Thing and John Constantine. That's Constantine, not Constantine.
Do you need to change your pants before we
keep? I love that. Those are my favorites. And they did a little info with the Russo brothers where they said, you know, they gave some tidbits about things they wanted to do in Endgame and didn't do.
Yeah.
Where 2023 Thanos goes back to 2024 and decapitates Captain America and brings it back to 2023 and shows him. And they were just like, yeah, they would cut that part out. Doctor Strange was going to transport Thanos to the Living Tribunal, which was like a big cosmic thing that they couldn't do. And they said that the hardest character that Marvel Studios didn't know what to do with was Thor, because they didn't know where his story was going to go.
Yeah.
And now here we are at Thor 4. You know,
I still wonder Guardians where it's going to go.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? What else was there? There was that Brandon Routh is returning as Superman in the Crisis of Infinite Earths crossover.
That'll be
kind of fun.
Ever since they cast him as the Atom in the CW stuff, I'm like, it's DC.
Yeah.
He's there. Like,
and they
can we use this somehow?
They brought in John Wesley Shipp. They brought in Helen Slater.
Right.
They brought in Dean Cain. They brought in all of these people.
I mean, what a great opportunity. They're in the multiverse now. They're doing all that stuff. And it's like, you've got Brandon Routh. Put him in that suit.
Yeah.
Because he was a good Superman. It's It's not, you know, Singer screwed it up.
Yeah.
But he was a good Superman. He had the look.
Right.
I mean, he was charismatic.
He does, and they also drop a little thing in the last crossover where when Kara shows up and Ray Palmer looks at her, he's like, man, that's so weird. She looks just like my cousin. So, like, it's a very interesting,
that's cool.
A very cute little thing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there was anything that DC hasn't gone on, or Warner's and Marvel haven't gone on yet, that's going to come on later today.
Yeah. I mean, you can look it all up online. Those are definitely some of the highlights, though.
Yeah.
The
Eisners were announced. So if you're a comic nerd, go check out which I think Mitch Gerrits and Tom King won for Mr. Miracle, which is fun. Like, if you haven't picked that up, I cannot recommend that enough. It's an amazing, amazing little book. But it's Comic-Con and, you know, movies and comics and galore. There's all kinds of good stuff out there. But I guess we should talk about 1994's Lion King.
So the box office stuff came out for just Friday and Saturday. So we're recording this early. We don't even have estimates for the entire weekend, but these numbers look like estimates for the entire weekend for you know, movies wish they could get these kind of numbers. So far, it opened up higher than any other Disney live action remake. Thursday night previews were 23 million, which beats Beauty and the Beast that only had 16.3 million. And you remember how big of a movie that was. And then they put Incredibles 2 on there, which I know a little bit different genre, but Incredibles 2 had 18.5 million, and that had a lot of hype around it. So it opened to 23 million on previews. The Friday numbers, I don't think they tie that in unless that was Friday as well.
Normally those are separate.
Oh, you know what? That's right. So sorry, Saturday is for Friday. You're right. Okay. So on Friday alone, 78.5 million domestic.
That's insane.
Yeah, I'm seeing that it's estimated to make $190 million this weekend.
Yeah, domestically. Now, overseas so far, just with Thursday night previews and Friday, you're looking at 270 million.
Good Lord.
Up to Saturday. So in those estimates could even be light. I mean, so we predicted that this movie would make all the money in the world. You know, we've talked about it before, but it is the highest grossing hand-drawn animated film of all time with almost $1 billion unadjusted for inflation.
Right.
It made almost $1 billion worldwide in 1994. The next highest movie, if I remember correctly, it's number 8 of all animated films unadjusted. The 7 above it are all CG, and the next most recent one was made 19 years after The Lion King.
Do you know what it was? So, out of curiosity?
No, I can click through and try to find it, but it took 19 years to unseat The Lion King, and that's not even adjusted. So, I mean, the movie was a phenomenon. You know, if you were around to remember it, it made all the money. It sold 55 million VHSs. It's the highest selling VHS of all time.
Those things were $99 a pop.
By this point.
No, they weren't. So, but yeah, I think the average was $10. I think it was 10 bucks or something, or
for
10
what?
To 15 average. Like when
it would have either been $14.99 or $19.99.
Yeah.
They didn't normally come
down
that
low. Mean, when I was looking at the numbers, I mean, when it was all said and done, I think it averaged to like $10 to $15.
So,
some were $30, some were $10 on sale at the end or whatever. But
yeah, I don't ever remember seeing an A-list Disney movie for $10 new. Yeah.
On VHS.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that may, you know, I looked up a bunch of numbers. That may have been the DVD numbers. It's possible that it was like $10 average on DVD because it is also in the top 10 highest selling DVDs of all time when it was finally released on that. So the point...
So when did DVD become a like
98?
Okay, like, yeah. So you've got what, like 3 years of VHS of this thing. You figure it came out in 95.
It made all its money in VHS, and then DVD hit, and people had to go buy it again.
5 years later, so yeah. Disney held on to that for 5 years that it was still raking in the VHS money, as they do, you know, or they used to be a lot worse about staggering it. But they're like, yeah, let's get all the VHSs. You have to own it,
and now you got $24.99.
What's that?
That was probably a suggested retail.
Yeah.
But it would go
in
on sale.
In the clamshell.
And the clamshell is probably $24.99, and you could probably pick it up for $18 or $19.99.
Maybe. Yeah, that makes sense.
But that was kind of where those kind of things typically live.
Yeah.
And then the direct-to-video stuff would be like a notch.
$14.15.
Yeah, it would be a notch below that.
Yeah, so the point is this movie always has made all the money in the world when it was released previously, the original animated one. So we all expected big numbers. It's definitely delivering on that. But if you're wondering why we're almost 30 minutes into this podcast and haven't talked about the plot of the film yet, you may have already heard from the online reviews, but it's the same movie.
There's nothing.
With a facelift.
Almost shot for shot.
Yep.
The only thing they added was a giant ball of poop.
Yep. Which was a weird option, which is a weird choice.
Like, I liked it, but it was also like, well, this is a weird thing.
A ball of poop.
Of all the things that they could add.
Right.
What if we threw in a big giant ball of poop?
Right. It's so,
hey, I'm a Disney executive, and looking like there's not a lot of change here. Hang on.
Yeah.
Hear me out.
Favreau's in a meeting.
Giant ball of poop.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay.
Done. Let's do it.
Kids love giant balls of poop.
But here's the thing. Can you change anything from this movie?
You know, when I was reviewing this on the radio, I was expressing that I'm like this is a stunning movie to look at.
Sure.
Its source material is solid. So like, while my review is kind of meh, like if you want to go see this movie, you're gonna like it.
Right.
Right? Like it's the songs are good, the performances are good. It's stunning to look at, but like it's such a repeat that you know, it's kind of like, well, you know when to pee.
True, yeah.
And somebody was like, well, you can't change The Lion King. And I was like, I don't think you understand just exactly how unchanged we're talking.
Right.
You know, like, I'm like this, like, I'm not saying that they should have completely reinvented the film.
Sure.
But, like, if you look at some of the other, like,
Jungle Book's a different movie.
Jungle Book is like, it takes kind of the core, but you don't need to change it as much as that, because honestly, Jungle King isn't as good as Lion King. Or Jungle Book isn't as good as the...
That's a completely different movie.
Right. Jungle Book isn't as good as The Lion King.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like you have more latitude with which to play, because nobody, or at least no normal person, is a Jungle Book purist.
Sure.
Right?
And if you are... The movie isn't for you anyway.
Right. But like Cinderella is, I think, a good example of the world in which you can live in terms of making tweaks to a movie like this.
They took the framework of Cinderella.
I felt like Cinderella was pretty faithful, but they made these adjustments that updated it in a way that didn't undermine or devalue the original.
Sure.
And I feel like Lion King could have done that. And instead, they just, I mean, there are large swaths of this film that are just not, I mean, they are, the camera angle's the same. Yep. Like, it is shot,
Gus Van Sant's Psycho.
Right.
It's the closest thing we've seen since that. Now, I'll tell you, I mean, you're hitting the nail on the head. That's exactly the problem they have. But the larger issue that Favreau was faced with, I think he was scared to make too many changes.
Right.
Because it really is a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Those other movies, like you said, aren't as beloved. There's tons of great Disney movies. I mean, they're all beloved by a lot of people out there, but The Lion King being the highest grossing movie on home video of all time and the highest grossing, you know, hand-drawn animation, like, it is to a level to where it has so much love and was actually a cultural phenomenon, as opposed to just like, hey, this is early Disney and there's nothing else to see and this is magical and great.
Right.
But like, Lion King was at a time where, you know, you did have more choices, but people showed up in droves and they've been watching it ever since.
So I guess the question is, if, you know, you think that Favreau at this point had earned enough clout to be like, look, I get what you want me to do here. Can I tweak it here? Can I change it here? So do you think this is another Disney studio meddling? They're like, just remake it.
I think,
do you think Favreau said, I'm just going to remake, I'm just going
to
do it?
I think at this point, Favreau can kind of do what he wants.
He could have if he wanted.
Like, if he wanted to go in and lobby for some tweaks, I think he probably could have got them. So I think... that this is probably pretty close to what Favreau wanted to do.
Okay.
I think he was scared to, I mean, he was in charge of it, and he's proven himself with Lion King, or I'm sorry, The Jungle Book, which is, you know, a similar thing with the CG animals and all that, and with Disney properties, we know his Marvel pedigree. You know, I think that, you know, he had the job and he's a great director, but when it comes to the changes, again, I mean, if you changed it too much, I mean, and now, to be fair, it's the critics that are, panning this movie,
of course. It's always going to be,
but sometimes they line up, and sometimes it's flipped the other way. But just so that we're all clear, it's the critics, which are a very minority of people. You know, I mean, there's way more, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions, of fans of The Lion King as opposed to the handful of thousands of critics. So, people are loving this movie, and I think they're loving it because of the reasons that we are saying it fails. They want a shot-for-shot remake. They want to see the story that they love and know, but with this facelift, because they love CG and they love, you know, new animation and everything. So these reasons we're talking about when we're criticizing, it's like, I think he made the right decision from a financial standpoint, because if he screwed it up, if all the new stuff and the changes that he got rid of were people's favorite parts, and they'd be mad about it.
Right.
So as a business, I think he did the right thing and Disney did the right thing. Now, for creativity, for art, I mean, again, look at how critics panned Psycho remake. It's like, you're just going to get people asking from a critical,
you know, because you could see Anastasia's butthole.
But it's like, what's the point? That's what all the critics are asking. What is the point? What are you bringing? And so I reviewed this movie, actually, because Brad was out of town and I went to the screening. So I wrote the review on Review STL, and I went through, and I think
you're,
I was
slumming.
Pretty, what's that?
So are you slumming right now? We're having to write reviews again for movies.
I don't
instead
mind.
Of sending Brad. Or
I don't mind. It's just more work to do, but I don't mind. So, but I, you know, I think I was fair, but, and I'm not the kind of person that ever is just like, what's the point? I love the idea of remakes and putting a spin on stuff. Like, I'm open-minded about this stuff, but after seeing it, this is the closest I think I've ever been to being just like, what's the point? Like, because the graphics, the visual updates, which are incredible.
Yeah.
I've never seen more stunning computer animation in my life.
It's like they film, it's like those Disney nature
movies. It's like a Disney, I said that on the radio, like, this is like a Disney nature movie, except they talk and sing.
Right. But some people are saying, throwing around words like Uncanny Valley, and maybe when they're talking, that's the only part, you know, because that's...
I feel like their faces couldn't express emotions very
well.
And I
wonder if
that's not uncanny. That but just means
no,
that they look like...
The Cats trailer is the Uncanny
Valley. Yeah, that's the Uncanny
Valley. Yeah, but I don't know that there's another... I just think there's not another phrase to describe it, but that it's like, because the animals can't... There isn't a way to make a realistic animal express emotion with facial features.
Sure.
When you're hearing... Like, because I and some parts of the movies had trouble telling which animal was talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, it wasn't obvious based on movement sometimes.
Right.
And so, but there's not another, we don't have another word for it. And it so is, I think people are leaning on Uncanny Valley.
When you're looking at, you know, the scene, the Mufasa death scene, where in the cartoon, they're able to move his eyebrows or snarl or do all kinds of stuff. And when he lets go, obviously his mouth is going to move in a way that an actual lion's mouth will not.
Right.
And I do think, like, you lose that in the scene in this one.
Right, he can't sneer.
He can't do anything. Yeah. Neither Scar nor Mufasa can have...
Right.
That's the number one detriment to this movie. The number one is that the animals can't emote. Because when Mufasa dies, I think the one that you didn't mention, which is the most important, is Simba. That kid is acting his ass off.
Which kid? JTT?
No, the new one. I'm not being critical of the original. The original is near perfect. But all my criticisms are with the emoting of these lions. The kid, the new kid that's acting his ass off, you're looking at him and his face looks the same as when he was singing "I Just Can't Wait to Be King."
Right, right.
He can't, these animals cannot change their emotes. I mean, I wish they could have at least just wrinkled their forehead a little bit, like, you know, to give them some kind of eyebrow effect. They went the route of like, yeah, these animals look super realistic, and of course they don't do this facial stuff in real life, but you lost the magic. I mean, before this podcast, Katie and I were watching Lion King. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched Just Can't Wait to Be King and some of the other musical numbers. And when you look at these lions, aside from the color and the, you know, Busby Berkeley looking scene with hippos and stuff, which is all amazing in the animation, but aside from all that fun stuff, looking at the lions, I mean, Simba is smiling.
Well, he's also, he's bouncing. Like when he walks, there's like a bounce in his step that an actual lion's cub just probably wouldn't have.
Right.
You know? A little bit, but I mean, if you look at that animation, I mean, they studied real lions. I mean, when they move and everything, it actually is pretty realistic.
Right.
But it's more the, when he's sad and when he's, you know, because
Mufasa
dies.
But it's easier to take liberties to express those things.
In a cartoon.
Like, you can still be, you know, realistic with movement, but then adjust in a way that you can't, like, if you had a realistic lion doing that, I think that people would be complaining about that too. Like,
yeah, that's
the way that is though. Like Favreau's is stuck between the eight ball.
That's the problem is you couldn't please people, and so it's to make it hyper realistic, you lose all that stuff. And he may have valid reasons, but then that just brings us full circle back to our point. Well, then why make it if you're going to limit the story and
because
the fun?
Of that box office.
Right. But
I'm sorry, were you not listening when we said $190 million domestic?
Totally. But from a critical person, I mean, you're not going to win over the critics who are looking at his art. And a lot of these people love The Lion King, as most everyone in the world does. And so again, we're making all these excuses and like,
except for hyenas.
Not happy.
They don't like The Lion King.
Not at all.
They did not come out looking good at all.
No, they don't.
So I think it's a shame because Favreau is such a good director. And again, this is all critical. It's making him all the money in the world. I think it's a shame because he's a great director and The Lion King's a great story with great songs. But
And I will say that I also think Favreau set out to do did exactly what he set out to do.
Totally.
I enjoyed his kind of reinterpretation of Jungle Book. And that's the other thing. People were like, you wouldn't want to change anything. You could never change The Lion King. Everyone would hate that. Broadway?
Big changes.
You know, so I think I have solid proof that you're effing wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you can make major changes to The Lion King, and people will love it.
I never saw the live-action Beauty and the Beast. So did they change that?
No, the live action Beauty.
A little bit. Belle's backstory with
I thought you were talking about stage stuff.
No, I'm sorry. The movie.
Yeah, I mean they expand on it.
They added backstory, but beyond that, it's a pretty fake. But there is some addition.
It's
they
close,
added
but there's there's expanded, and much like Cinderella. It's closer than Cinderella was, but Beauty and the Beast still has enough additional stuff to where I think it was interesting to explore. Belle is kind of an inventor like her father. She actually fixes things that he can't figure out.
She doesn't keep her nose in a book.
No, it's they give her the more of the like inventor. You know, she's really smart.
They dial down the Stockholm syndrome some.
I mean, with this movie though, and again, the reason why we're not going beat by beat with the plot is because you've seen it, you know it, so I think it makes more sense for us to talk about the things. I mean, the number one reason you want to see this movie, and if you want to, you're going to anyway, but the number one reason to see it is the beautiful computer animation.
Oh man,
there's no live action.
It's unbelievable.
It's photorealistic, like we said earlier. I mentioned the Uncanny Valley, which if you don't know, it's when computer effects look really realistic, but your brain's like, but that just doesn't look right.
Right.
The weight of it, the look of it, it's really, really good, but it doesn't work right.
I guess Cats isn't the Uncanny Valley. Cats is just like, what are you doing?
I mean, it's pretty uncanny.
That doesn't make any sense.
But, you know, this movie is beautiful, and I saw it a second time today, you know, so I just got back from seeing it again, and you cannot deny that these photorealistic computer effects are amazing, but that doesn't mean that photorealism is the way to tell this story.
So once you, after you, now that you've seen it twice.
Oh, I hated it more the second time.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Hated?
What's that?
Hated?
Well, I liked it less the second time.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't hate it because if you like the original, it's hard to hate an exact copy.
That's why I was asking, because I'm like, my take is more kind of,
I was more mad the second time. Okay. I didn't go back knowing what happened and then go, oh, okay, it's a little better.
I wasn't saying you were wrong.
Yeah,
I was just
no.
curious if you meant the word hated.
No, that's a little strong, but I was more frustrated the second time around because I'll tell you what, this movie takes everything you love about the original and makes it worse.
Can I tell you that I think the voice acting was worse?
It's all worse.
With the exception of Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen, who I thought were the MVPs of this movie.
They absolutely were. And they're not better.
No.
But they're an example of you get a different, like they're the closest to a different take.
Yes. Yes.
That works.
The most changes in the movie, the most changes were Timon and Pumbaa.
And they were
great.
They were great.
The jokes were updated.
When he does the Seth Rogen laugh, and I was like, yeah,
that's Pumbaa.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, they're the best part, hands down. But the thing, okay, so when you go to these Disney musicals, so starting with The Little Mermaid, when Disney musicals became Broadway musicals.
When did that start?
89.
So the same year that they released The Little Mermaid in theaters? They released the Little Mermaid music.
No. When he's saying metaphorically,
I'm sorry.
The Disney movies really started using.
I see. I thought
kind of a Broadway model template
for
how they were structuring.
Yeah, I see what
film.
Exactly.
I thought you meant like the Broadway version of this movie.
Yeah. So Howard Ashman and Alan Menken, were responsible for Little Shop of Horrors,
right?
The musical.
Yes.
And so they brought them in to do the Little Mermaid, the music and lyrics for Little Mermaid. And so they structured it like a musical. And Disney, even though it had great animation and it had songs, they weren't structured like musicals.
Right.
You know, where with the I Want song and, you know, the Poor Unfortunate Souls and explaining the plot with them, you know, mm-hmm. they're musicals. So the point is, now, God, what the hell was I saying?
Well, I think.
Hold on. What the? Okay. So, starting with 89 with The Little Mermaid, they became known for their musicals. And so, Lion King is one of the best of that Disney Renaissance. And so, one of the most important elements is the music and the songs. And so, the originals are so good that, once again, when you translate these to this quote unquote live action.
And now
setting,
you're doing cover songs.
Well, kind of, but because it's weighted in the real world, because it looks so photorealistic, you lose the magic of the music, which is what
makes
that movie.
That makes sense.
And so the thing that really made me frustrated was on the second viewing, I noticed even more how flat every musical number was.
Yeah.
So, and then after the second viewing, I went and watched the animated. I'll use Just Can't Wait to Be King again. They're dancing on top of giraffes and hippos and Busby Berkeley with all the animals. And he's got the red mane around him with leaves. It's so colorful and it's so fun. It is so much fun. And the music, you feel the music. And then watching this in theaters, I like could have taken a nap during it. It's just they're walking around,
right.
Sometimes sprinting around. They're not on animals' backs. No animals are dancing. It's lions just walking and running around singing with this uncanny mouth movement. And what's fun about that? So it may be the same song with the same lyrics. I do prefer the original arrangements, but it's pretty close to the same song, but you lost everything that made that scene magical by making them be realistic lions.
Did Elton John only do The Lion King? Or did he...
I don't think he's done any other Disney movies.
So
that.
Who? Oh, it was Phil Collins.
Phil Collins
came in and did Tarzan and did something else after Tarzan, right?
Billy Joel was Oliver and Company, which was.
But he didn't write anything, though, right?
You don't
just
think
singing?
So?
Did he just perform?
I thought he wrote that main song that he sings.
Maybe he wrote that because that is kind of his.
Yeah. I feel like he did, but Phil Collins was Tarzan.
But I felt like Phil Collins, a brief moment, they were hiring, like, we've talked about, obviously, on Rocket Man, like, Elton John in 1994 was the king.
Yeah.
Like, no pun intended. So, like, that dude was on top of the world. And then they bring, so they were bringing
some,
in.
Some people might not know how all that broke down. So Elton John did the music.
Yeah.
Tim Rice did the lyrics.
Right.
Hans Zimmer did the score.
Yeah. Like those, so, those are some serious.
Yeah. Some people confuse.
Even today,
yeah.
those three names
sure.
are heavyweights, super heavyweights.
Real quick, yeah. Billy Joel did not write
did any of it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. The song you're thinking of was written by Dan Hartman and Charlie Midnight.
Oh, okay. The main, like, why do I worry? Yeah, or whatever. That's
okay. Song, yeah.
No, Dan Hartman was writing stuff for Oliver and Company. Who knew?
So I think, I mean, I don't know. How did you guys feel when you watched those musical numbers? Were you moved by them?
I felt
energy,
like,
sucked out of the auditorium.
Everything that made, and I, like, don't get me wrong, the original one is amazing, but it just, those movies aren't my thing.
Gotcha.
You know,
you don't have the same.
I do not have, you know, but
you still could recognize
absolutely that this voice cast, there's something missing.
It's a great voice cast. Name
on paper.
I mean, it's a great voice cast, but I also feel, and Katie agreed, I don't know how you felt, Tom, with this, but some of the voices, as great of actors as they are, didn't match the lines. Like, I just don't feel like the
sometimes,
end product was as.
I think sometimes when you cast names, it's hard not to hear the name.
True.
Yeah.
You know, so it can be hard just not to be like, that's Donald Glover talking.
So that was the only one that didn't bother me.
Yeah.
I thought,
he's great.
I thought that.
I love Donald Glover.
Yeah. I thought
because
that,
he's
like,
so great. It's just, yeah.
I thought that his Simba reminded me the most of Matthew Broderick without being Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. And I wasn't even necessarily singling him out. I just mean that, like, but I'm.
Those
but
three. But like the James Earl Jones stuff. And I was like, man, like, why?
Well, it's the same reason why when you hear Kevin Conroy now.
It is. It really, like, it's but, just, but why not if, it, why not just, you have his audio track.
They just.
Just reuse it.
They just, I mean, if they're making
if you
a new
don't
thing.
But if you don't want to, if you don't, and you can't put somebody else's Mufasa, you can't.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, it's
like who
casting.
Else has
not
that,
while he's still
well,
around.
The thing is,
I
like,
mean, that would be,
who else are you going to cast as JJ?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you're not going to do, there's nobody better.
They're not going to recycle an actor's audio from an older thing when he's still alive and willing to do it. Like,
I got to tell you, if they had the option, they would have done that for the genie. I guarantee you.
I don't know.
I guarantee you.
It's such a different take. And I mean, look how it's working out for him.
I mean, that's true.
I mean, it's,
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. But the voice cast, again, it's a huge.
That's an interesting question. If Robin Williams was still alive, would they have cast Will Smith? Or
oh,
would
no, no, no. If he were alive.
But he's also alive at 65, right? Like,
yeah, but you and I both know that Robin Williams at 65 is the exact same guy
but like that
from
could,
Robin Williams
but that
at
could also
35.
Look kind of sad.
I think he'd be way more CG. Like, Will Smith
sure.
has that,
like, that
hybrid effect.
That,
I think it would be CG
that,
Robin Williams.
That
certainly.
Might be how they get around
that,
it. They do
yeah.
more of a mocap thing. Yeah. And, yeah.
I didn't think about a 65-year-old Robin Williams on screen. I'm thinking
right.
voice and CG.
That's
but,
what I was. I'm with
yeah.
you.
So the cast is stellar. I mean, but here's the problem. And it's the same thing that you have going on with the animated film. The older characters who are the ones that you're looking to for the voices, Donald Glover, Beyonce, you know, they do great here, but there's not a lot going on.
Right.
The young Simba, the young Nala is the actress from Us, the daughter from Us.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
So, but they do a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
You know, Simba has to deal with the death of Mufasa. They have to sing that Just Can't Wait to Be King, which is one of the hugest songs, and deal with, you know, dealing with the hyenas and learning the lessons from Mufasa.
So was that, did he do two of them?
Keegan-Michael Key?
Yeah.
He did.
Did he do just
no,
the
no.
one?
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
is it Eric Andre is the other one?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they don't have the special needs one.
No. So then, okay. So
got that one out.
So Ed, okay. So, Shenzi was originally played by Whoopi Goldberg.
Correct.
Shenzi is in this movie.
But in this one, she's definitely more of like the tribe leader.
Yeah. So the difference is the very few differences they made. So they replaced, Ed, Banzai and Ed, I
yeah.
think are the two
yeah.
hyenas who were Cheech and Jim Cummings, who voices
right.
Winnie the Pooh and Tigger and a lot of
right,
the Disney
right, right.
voices. They replaced those two with Keegan-Michael Key and Eric Andre. And the running gag in this one is all about personal space, which I thought got very tired quickly.
I liked
a couple times.
I liked it initially.
In the beginning.
Yeah.
But the whole running gag is that Eric Andre gets too close to Keegan-Michael
right.
Key.
I don't know.
And it
like
just,
that worked for me.
Really?
Yeah. yeah. I because like they only do it like twice.
Oh,
they really only do. They only make reference to it twice.
They do it a few more times than twice, trust
but
me. Because I just
like
saw it again.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
okay.
But, and you know, I didn't find it as fun as the original, but whatever. So they replaced those two characters, but you still have a couple of goofy hyenas and a right. leader one. And,
right.
And, you know, Shenzi's given more to do here. But the other difference, what was the other difference?
The poop ball.
The poop ball.
Yeah.
Giant ball of poop, which was poop. Just a little inside baseball.
Yeah.
Was almost the name of this podcast. Yeah.
So if
we dodge that bullet.
Yeah.
Now, if you're wondering why this movie's 1 hour and 58 minutes, but we're telling you, hey, there's only a couple changes. It's just everything was stretched out.
Yes. There's 6 minutes of poop ball.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you're not kidding. And that sounds light. I mean,
it was a hefty ball.
Yeah. Well, he was a little constipated.
That's fair.
So it took a minute. Yeah. It took a second to work it out.
I also find it funny that they're just like, I feel like they had to do research.
Yeah.
They're like, how does a giraffe poop? Like, what does it look like? They're like, I'm sure the people in the production department are like, why?
You know, there's like three guys at Disney that are like, honey, I have to go out of town. What are you doing? Flying to Africa to look at poop.
Get it right.
And she goes, here's your divorce papers, you cheater.
Like, yeah, like, why can't you just go to Animal Kingdom?
Like, nope, I gotta. Be,
I don't know.
I gotta be hands on.
To Africa to look at poop.
Yeah, gotta be hands on.
But the reason why it's over a half hour longer than the original movie is because everything's stretched out. So, you know, Circle of Life opening number, shot for shot, and it looks gorgeous.
Sure. Yeah.
But after that, in the cartoon, you cut to a little mouse, and he scurries around for 1 second, and then Scar catches him.
Right.
In this movie, you follow a mouse on his like life journey.
Yeah.
And then Scar catches him. The poop ball thing, which, I mean, it was a clever idea. Everyone thinks Simba's dead. You all know the story. After he leaves and Mufasa dies, everyone thinks he's dead. Well, his tuft of fur goes in the water.
Well,
in
the original, obviously, he plops down. We see sex written in
SFX,
the...
SFX, yeah.
And then Rafiki, you know, he stumbles upon it and he realizes that Simba's alive.
So this is a clever way to have a new... How does Rafiki know that Simba's alive?
Right.
But it goes on forever. I mean, watching it the second time, and I knew it was going to happen. It was long the first time, but the tuft goes here and there, and these animals, and this one eats it.
We should say that, like, same scene. Simba kind of plops down, his tuft kind of like floats.
He doesn't plop down; he's drinking water.
Oh, that's right.
It falls in the water.
It gets stuck in a tree. A giraffe eats the tuft, and when the giraffe eats it, I was like, huh.
Fades to black. Like, that's the end.
Right.
But they have to have a time lapse so the giraffe can go to the bathroom.
And then you see a dung beetle pushing along a literal ball of poop. And then it breaks apart and the tuft does its thing.
But the point is, all these extended scenes that made it a half hour longer were unnecessary.
Right.
They were like, we have this beautiful computer animation. It all looks photorealistic. And that's great. But you made this movie too long. Like, in my theater, the second time that I saw it with the critics the first time. When I saw it the second time, I mean, by an hour and a half, hour 20, hour and a half, those kids were getting restless because I think the movie's a bit too long.
Yeah.
You know? It's also, I mean, we know who this is for.
Yeah.
Like, the target audience is what? 5 to...
No.
You think it's younger
target
than
audience
target,
is
target audience are the parents.
Oh, sure,
to
sure.
40. The parents taking their kids back to a movie they enjoyed when they were kids.
The nostalgia factor.
You know how I can verify that? Because when the kid was screaming and crying and talking and running around for the last 30 minutes of the movie, they would not step foot outside the theater with that kid. You know why? Because they don't want to miss a darn minute of their Lion King movie.
Right,
so
right,
let's
right.
just, you know, so frustrating. I'm like,
I will. It's funny how different, you know, I bagged on the audience during the Crawl movie. This one was great. Like, it was a great, they laughed at the right parts. Like, there was no, there were a couple. Like younger kids who, like, I don't really think knew what was going on. You know, like, you take a 3-year-old to a movie,
right?
And the kid has no idea what's happening. But I think overall it was a great audience. So, like, I didn't have that issue where kids were just like, I don't want to watch this anymore.
Yeah, and it wasn't huge, but I mean, it just hour 20, hour 30, I saw more kids getting in the aisle and their kid and parents had to say sit down and stuff. That's why animated movies, not only are they expensive, but kids' attention spans, you know, hour 15, right in there.
You
great.
Get your kid to
we're
sit down
to
for an hour 15.
But
more power to you.
2 hours, though. That's long. But I will say...
Well, especially when there's 25 minutes trailers in front of that 2 hours.
That's,
here's what I will say about that is Marcus, to their credit, trims it down.
They have the
they've figured it out.
The shortest.
They
of
do when
what
they
we have locally.
Yeah, of kid when you go see like a kids quote unquote kids movie, they give you like two, and I wouldn't even call them trailers. I'll give them they're teasers. Like, those aren't trailers. Okay. And then they're bam, we're off.
I love
to the races.
Marcus, but you know when you go to AMC, you get 23 minutes. I've kind of found the average, and I know I can show up 23 minutes later and sit down right when the movie's about to start, or 20 minutes. You know, but I will say once Timon and Pumbaa show up, and especially on the second viewing, I mean, it was just like snooze city. The story's great and all, the songs we all know and love, but the movie just feels, I don't know, there's no energy to it. It's lacking the same energy. And when they show up, boom. I mean, Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner are
great.
Were great casting. And
they're great together. Like the,
yeah. They, like, I left that wanting to see them in a movie together.
Totally, I want to see Lion King 1.5.
But, well, I think you're going to get it.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
You're going to get a Lion King 1.2, 1.3, 1.3. Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is they recorded their lines together. With Donald Glover.
That makes
which doesn't happen
sense.
In audio recording. So the three of them actually got to record together.
And
which
you can feel
very,
that.
Yeah. And I
that's
think that's why, I mean, you
that's
know.
When the, well, that's when the energy is in that movie.
You can tell they're riffing on stuff. All their jokes hit. I mean, they are laugh out loud hilarious. The energy picks up. There's something new
and
in there.
And that was Nathan Lane and
Ernie Sabella.
The guy from Carelli from Saved by the Bell.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Zach's boss.
Wasn't he the superintendent of the apartment complex in Perfect Strangers?
He may have been.
He's another Broadway guy. He was doing Guys
because they were in Guys and Dolls together. That's how they ended up in
makes sense.
In Lion King is because that Guys and Dolls revival was
massive.
Was a juggernaut.
Yeah.
Also in Guys and Dolls revival, J.K. Simmons.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They brought a whole different energy to the movie, and it worked at the same time. The jokes hit again. There is just something about that chemistry, and I know that they're the comedic relief, so they're by default more entertaining.
Right.
But there's something fresh about it. Obviously, new voices, but the jokes are fresh. They even riff on the old stuff. Like, he says fart in this one.
Yeah, he's like,
I
did like that. He was like, are you going to stop me? And they're like, no.
I mean, the stuff like that where they kind of poke fun and riff on the original. So it's like the stuff's there. You know that line's coming up, but they change it.
Right.
Whereas everything else, you didn't have those surprises. So they brought that fresh energy to it. And the film really picks up from there. But again, I mean, once now Simba's grown up and you got Donald Glover, you have Beyonce as Nala. And they're fine, but, I mean, they just don't have that much to do. You know, Jeremy Irons the original Scar, and it's hard not to compare that voice. But I think that Chiwetel Ejiofor is...
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think he gives the best performance of this film because Scar is the most complex character. He's given the most to do, and to his credit, you know, even if people are going to compare it all day long, but on his own, judging his performance, I mean, I think he was good.
I feel like he was almost more menacing because when Jeremy Irons would go up, like Chiwetel would drop down.
It's a darker
and it would
portrayal.
Like, yeah, so it's this is the only wrestling reference you'll get for the day.
Oh, jeez.
Jake the Snake Roberts, when he would do promos,
rather
than screaming and yelling and telling, you know, doing a 1980s wrestling promo, he would talk at a lower octave. He would talk slower. So the viewer would be like, would have to like lean in and be like, what are you like? You would be more entranced in what he was saying, where I feel like Chiwetel Ejiofor did the same thing here.
Yeah.
Where
it was
like,
a totally dark,
but
ominous, slow delivery. And I think it worked. So, but you know, the other ones were fine. You know, I think the vocal performances were good, but none of them changed the characters as much as, you know, Eichner and Rogen. And hats off to them. I think every one that talks about this movie online and people I've talked to in person, the thing they take away from it, because there's not much else to say other than pretty movie, same story, the one thing that everyone says is Timon and Pumbaa stole the show.
Yep.
And so I would not be surprised if those two get their own, you know, hopefully original movie.
Right.
And if they can recreate that same magic, obviously they're
both
very funny.
But it's also, I think Rogen has been doing voices for a long time. Like, he's been doing voice work, you know? Like, he did Sausage Party. He did Monsters versus Aliens.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
He's funny, and he has...
But he knows how to, like, he's very funny, but he also knows how to, like, translate voice acting.
Yeah.
He knows how to be a voice actor, where I feel like Donald Glover, Beyonce, Chiwetel Ejiofor maybe don't. Alfre Woodard is in this as well as Simba's mom. So, like, I don't know if they're just, like... There is a certain degree of skill you need to be a voice actor. You can't just do...
People think, you know, if you're
an actor... I'm just
going
to read lines.
Yeah, but look at the people like Jim Cummings that we mentioned, Frank Kevin Welker, Conroy,
Mark Hamill.
Yeah, look at the people who have made careers out of voice acting, and a lot of them are actors that have done live action. But some of them have just done voices for the most part, and look, they're in hundreds, if not thousands, of roles, and there's a reason.
Right.
The guy that was SpongeBob's
in all kinds. Like, if you look at
is he?
Yeah, he's in all kinds of stuff.
Gotcha.
Granted, he's SpongeBob.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to do all
kinds
of stuff.
That's the one that I mainly know. Tom Kenny?
Kenny, yeah.
But voice acting is tough because you
Hank Azaria.
Oh, yeah. Think about it. I mean, with voice acting, sure, you're like, yeah, you don't have to be on camera, but with your voice alone, you can't do your facial, like a lot of people. Jim Carrey, just throwing that out there, you know, facial features, acting with your face and making
he can
those.
Do, like,
I'm not saying he can't. I'm not saying he can't.
Has he done voice work?
Some, but I mean, I'm not saying he can't. My point is that they get the added benefit of using their facial features.
Sure.
Voice actors have to, through their voice alone, emote.
That was what was that documentary about? Wasn't there a documentary about like voice acting?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. There was
from Futurama, Joe.
Yes. Yes,
he was
that's right.
The host of it.
He would say like somebody. They were doing an interview with somebody. And like he's like, I would go to conventions and people are like, oh, I can talk just like Marty McFly. And the guy's like, cool. Can you sing like Marty McFly? And the guy's like, what? And he's like, yeah, you can do three lines and sound like Michael J. Fox. Let me know when you can sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star as Michael J. Fox singing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
And can you eat? Can you talk with a voice or a mouthful of Cheerios like the character's supposed to be eating cereal and keep the voice?
Right.
And, you know,
and can you do more than Michael J. Fox?
Yeah. So.
I mean, the real challenge is like recreating a line sounding like a character is much easier than here's three new pages of dialogue that have never been said. How would they say it?
Right. Rob Paulsen is great about that.
Sure.
Rob Paulsen's another one.
He's another one that's been around forever.
Well, he was
Dave Coulier.
Dave Coulier. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so I feel like they're those two guys figured out the acting part. Yeah. Of doing a voice acting.
Well, and again, I mean, they've got a background in comedy and improvising. So it was perfect casting and they delivered on it. But, you know, the other big extension is that ending fight sequence. I mean, it goes on for a while.
You're right.
I mean,
sure.
It's a battle, whereas really it's just Scar and
Simba.
You know, with that confrontation and they do the same thing here, but there is the war they talk about in the beginning of the movie that hyenas and lions have always been at war and they are natural enemies. But they actually have a little battle at the end of the movie. And I thought, geez, for small kids, this movie's a lot scarier than the original in that regard.
Yeah.
I mean, they're with the fighting, you know,
when they tear, you know, Scar apart and chew his insides out. That was intense.
You know, what I thought was interesting was I don't remember in the original movie, Scar saying that Mufasa gave him that scar, but in this one he does.
They never reference the scar.
Yeah,
in the original one, because I thought the same thing.
They allude
to because
he goes, "I would never challenge you again."
Again,
alluding to the scars from Mufasa. So
right.
I thought that was interesting, at least, and that may be in a book or something, but I don't remember in the movie. But you know, the ending really again goes down the same way, but you get a lot of lion fighting the hyenas, and I thought the fight scene between Simba and Scar, I mean, they looked like two lions.
Oh, yeah. It was
going
insanely well done.
Again, for the photorealism and the way animals move and fight in this case, all stellar.
Yeah.
But it's just like, did I need to see photorealistic lions fighting for an extra 10 minutes? I mean, it was cool, but did it further this story?
I did forget how, like, they caught Scar. Like,
the hyenas?
Yeah. Well, no. Like, I forgot, like, how Scar got revealed as who killed Mufasa.
Yeah.
So like when they're doing that, I was like, man, how does that happen? Like, I don't remember at all. I was like, oh yeah, because he's a dummy. And he did the Bond villain thing.
Yeah, sure.
Divulged his plan at the very end.
Yeah, but you know, he still delivers. I mean, most of the lines are all the exact same, but he still delivers that iconic, I killed Mufasa.
Right.
And they overhear him saying that he looked into Mufasa's eyes, and then Simba's mom says, how did you see the look in his eyes? So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it.
Can't change your mind.
Obviously it's making
all
the, what did Spider-Man do this weekend? Where is it at? Just out of curiosity. Other Disney. Yeah.
It looks like it is number two with 6 million compared to Lion King.
Number two is at six.
With Lion King at 78 on Friday, not weekend, not Saturday.
Just Friday.
Just Friday.
But still.
But it's still going to be 200 compared to 15.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So the thing is, like you said, Joe, if you're going to see it, you're going to see it. We're not going to change your mind. Now, some people may be listening, wondering, like, is there enough changing? Should I pay 15 or 20 or 50 to take my family to it? I mean, I honestly could
not. It's
up
to you. I'm with you.
But if you're if you're on the fence and you're like, should I pay my hard-earned money to see this movie? Are the updated visuals and pretty much those changes alone worth spending all this money? I wouldn't recommend it.
I wouldn't either.
I think if you're wanting to go to the movies and you're looking for something to do, I think you'll leave reasonably entertained.
Yeah.
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 You know,
I think this is it's an amazing technological accomplishment.
That's
but it is.
I
nuts.
Also don't envision ever revisiting in this movie.
Nope.
That's the thing. Okay. Once this movie comes out on Blu-ray, and aside from, you know, special features, making of, and then also just looking at the breathtaking animation, besides from the, you know, wanting to see it again, you're like, yeah, that looks great. If you had the choice of 1994 Lion King or this one, and based on entertainment factor, which one would I like to be entertained by? I just can't imagine choosing the new one.
If there was only a way to, superimpose Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen into the animated movie.
No, the animated
one's
great.
It's not like they were substandard.
Oh, sure.
It's just a really good take on what was also really good.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they took something that was real, and I won't say that they improved on it, but they, much to my amazement, did not lessen it either.
Right. They matched the energy of the original.
At no point when they were doing what they did was I like, I miss Nathan Lane.
Right.
Like, I was, and not to slight Nathan Lane, but that, because I love that too.
Right.
Yeah. But it wasn't.
There was never a moment where, like you said, I miss those two guys.
Right.
Well, no, because you were like, thank God for these two. I mean, seriously, I felt the first time when I saw it and didn't know what to expect and I was watching it, I was like, this feels flat. Every musical number, I'm like, it's just boring. There's no impact. And when those two show up, it's fun. And then seeing it again, I'm like, thank goodness. They really do make a difference. You know what this movie reminded me of? And I haven't done it as much recently, but
The Lion King?
Well, you know that's what it reminded me of.
1994's Lion King?
But the way that I took in this movie and the things I appreciated, which were really the graphics of it, you know, when you buy a new graphics card for people that do computer gaming and everything, a lot of times you can download these stress tests. And the whole point of them is to push your system to the limit. And sometimes it's like lighting effects. Sometimes it's characters. Sometimes it's humans. But they stress your new graphics card and shows you how well your computer can perform. And there's some gorgeous looking visuals. But the whole point of it, it's not a game. The whole point of it is just to show off your video card.
Oh, sure.
This movie is like a 2-hour graphics test.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, the only reason to revisit it is to just show off your flat screen.
You know, it's a screensaver.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous, best looking computer animation I've ever seen in my life. But, you know, style over substance. It's just.
It makes me wonder what The Little Mermaid's going to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's another one that.
They've already got to do it underwater.
They've already done Aquaman. Yeah. So the technology is there. But I mean, like, it's there. Yeah. There's a precedent already.
Yeah.
And Disney will find a way to improve on that. The question is, what do you change? Or do you just redo it?
Yeah.
You know, you've already pissed off all the morons with casting an African-American woman as Ariel.
You know what I think they should do is they should be true to the original Grimm fairy tale
and have
where
her,
the mermaids are killing pirates.
Oh, I was like, turn her into foam at the end.
Yeah. They need to go real dark with this one. Hey, you didn't like how that Lion King was the exact same?
Guess
what? Well, I guess that's just the minority. I guess many people did like it. They're probably going to be like, hey, you know that Lion King movie where we copied the original?
We're just going to do that.
Never make another change in a Disney movie. You remember that Cinderella and Jungle Book crap you tried to pull?
Well, I mean, Mulan looks completely different.
Yeah, I was thinking as faithful as this one, the new Little Mermaid's probably like, I hope I got a pay or play deal.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of, though, for that, and I'm not saying there aren't, you can point to different examples, especially with African culture, but I feel like Mulan is so culture driven with a daughter and being married and the warriors and everything. I think there's so much culture there that the changes are very welcomed when it comes to Mulan.
If they make that movie like The Last Samurai, sign me up.
I mean, it's getting good buzz as far as the trailer. People are loving what they see. But you know what I mean? These are animals, right? So there's not, it's not like, oh, they do this dance and wear this outfit because it's culturally appropriate. Like, these are lions. They don't wear clothes. So, but with Mulan, these are humans and they do have that culture and how they dress. And so I think the changes there are welcomed and people are really digging it. But when it comes to animals and, you know, those are things that are, they, unless we apply human traits to them, you know,
yeah,
they're animals. And so you're not looking for super hyper realistic animals, or you'd watch Nat Geo.
Right.
You
right.
want to see.
Or a Disney doc.
Yeah. I wanted to see Simba riding on the back of a giraffe and hippos dancing and stuff. I guess the other question before we wrap this up that I wanted to ask you guys is, if you can have animals talk and sing, why can't you have them dance? That was the main difference that I think lacked the fun, is they didn't dance in this movie.
I think that when you have them dance, they're not, you're going to lose that photorealism.
Yeah.
I was kind of, yeah, because I guess they wouldn't move. You wouldn't
know
how
they're not going to move in that way.
Did Baloo dance?
Well, he sang in a pool in water, so
yeah,
it wasn't
but
as much.
And I guess King Louis definitely didn't dance.
Yeah, but also those are both of those animals walk upright. Yeah.
That's true. That's a good point.
Now, one thing that they did change is in the cartoon, Timon walked around on his hind legs for most of it.
Yeah.
And this one he went on fours because that's how they move.
But he did stand up.
But they do that in real life,
right,
too. They
right,
stand
right.
up to look around and whatever, like you always see, but
yeah.
they don't walk like that. And so, you know, but that's what they tried to do in a nutshell, is they applied all the movement traits
yeah.
to how these animals really move. But you're remaking a movie where the animals dance. And
yeah.
so I think for me, that was the one big thing where you lost all the fun of the dancing. And this is, like we talked about with Little Mermaid, I mean, Lion King was another Broadway musical animated.
Right.
And you dance and you sing. And just like, you know, some people, I guess, Joe, you're in this category, people that don't like musicals because they bust into songs and dance.
So
and
here's
just,
the thing is, like, this is an animated film, right?
Yeah, I know. Those
so
are the
that
ones that you would
I'm just say. Like, yeah, okay.
But in
like
most musicals, if people don't like musicals, they're like, that's weird. They're just busting out to singing and dancing.
Yeah.
But for people that love musicals, that's why you're there.
Right.
And I think with The Lion King, you're there for the singing and dancing animals. And by losing that, you lose what made it special. And at the end of the day, it's hard for something, and this is what I used in my review, but I think the best way that I was able to sum it up, it's hard for something that looks so lifelike to feel so lifeless.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It's a very good little tagline.
Yeah.
So I guess that's probably our outline.
Two quick things.
Okay.
Blumhouse is doing two new Halloween movies.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
One a year.
Halloween
Kills and Halloween Ends.
Right.
2020, 2021.
I think if there's anything we know, it's that Halloween doesn't really end.
Absolutely
yeah.
not.
Halloween yeah. ends, wink, you
yeah.
mean. Winky
I thought,
emoji.
I did that. That's amazing. Like
yeah.
the fact that they're doing it 2020 and then next the year, yeah. 2021, back to back. Game on, Blumhouse. Yeah. Well done.
So I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can also continue the conversation online at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers or join the League of Show Sharers. Of course, you can also check us out on Patreon.com/Real Spoilers, where if you want to give us $5, we will take it from you gladly. And what else? That's Apple Podcasts. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. I'm getting ready to leave on vacation.
He's got vacation brain already.
That's where my head's at. So we will be delayed next week, but we will get there. So whenever we circle back around, there is no way we won't at some point.
Oh, you better believe it, buddy.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So but give us a little time. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Aslan is Jesus.
It's clear from your vacant expression, the lights are not all on upstairs.
But we are talking kings and successions. Even you can't be caught unawares.
So prepare for the chance of a lifetime. Be prepared for sensational news. A shiny new era is tiptoeing nearer.
And where do we feature?
Just
hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.